श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गुरु गौरंग राधा गोविंद जी की जय, श्री पनिहाति चिददाही दंद महोत्सव की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमान। गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑफ यू, प्रणाम। Thanks so much for your generous presence and attention and association. So today we are concluding our series of lectures started last week on Sriman Mahaprabhu, Gaur Katha, Gaur Kathamrita, and we are converging in this last session with one of the main important leelas. Now, we have been going through Tattva for 2-3 different days, and after 3 days of Gaur Tattva, Gaur Tattva Kathamrita, we are entering now. We feel more equipped to address the leela. As we mentioned, Tattva is the foundation of leela. If you take a Tattva out of that, you no longer have leela. You have some ordinary activity. So even if leela is there, you won't be having the eyes to appreciate the leela, because many people may look at Gaur leela, Krishna leela, and just think these are ordinary dealings. So you require tattva, siddhanta, to appreciate. Oh no, this is not karma, but divya karma. Krishna says in the Gita, janma karma chame divyam. He who understands that my karma, my activity is divya, my birth and so on. Okay. For that person, there is a very particular result. So, how to understand that Krishna and Mahaprabhu's activities are leela, not ordinary dealings? We need tattva, siddhanta for that to happen. So we have been going through that, the first 3 meetings, Gaur tattva. And today we are having a glimpse of Gaur leela, if you will, concentrating in one particular... Hello? Okay. He's going to check. So today we are celebrating, interestingly, one very, very special celebration called Panihati Mahotsav, also called Tidadahi Mahotsav, also called Danda Mahotsav. However you like to call it, it's Mahotsav. Put the name you want, but do not take the word Mahotsav out, please, because that's what we want. We want to celebrate. Mahotsav means big celebration, and as we said the other day, we don't need to have some special day or pastime to have a Mahotsav. Mahotsav basically means to get together and speak Harikata. That's Mahotsav. Harikata in itself, as we said the other day, is the Mahotsav. Tadiva ramyam ruchiram navam navam tadiva sashvam Manasu Mahotsavam. Bhagavatam is saying in 12th canto. So Harikata is tasteful, relishable, navam navam, always new, never the same thing, it's not stale. And Sashvan Manasu Mahotsavam. And it constitutes a perpetual festival for the mind. Manasu Mahotsavam. The word Mahotsav is there in the Bhagavatam, referring to Harikata. So it's not that today we have Mahotsav because, as we will see, Raghunandas Goswami was ordered to make a particular festival. But to begin with, Mahotsav means we are getting the chance of getting together and hear, speak Harikata. That's the festival. On top of that, you can add so many layers of festivals, festivities. But the base foundational festival celebration is to get together and share Sangha, Harikata, Harikirtan. Strictly speaking, we don't need anything else for us to have a Mahotsav. If something else wants to be added to the equation, that's great. That will add. But the foundational celebration is Satsanga Harikata Harikirtan. But again, specifically today, according to our Panjika or Gaudiya calendar, there is one specific Lila, divine game, if you will, divine play in the context of Gaur Lila, that is celebrated called the Panihati Mahotsav, or Tridadahi Danda Mahotsav. Interestingly, it's one of the few ones that are included in our calendar. There are so many pastimes that took place that you read in Shastra, but not all of them are celebrated in the calendar. It's not that, okay, today Mahaprabhu showed Mahaprakash Lila, today Mahaprabhu chastised the Kasi, today Mahaprabhu did that. Generally, all those are not like in the calendar, but this one is there, as with another few ones. And so that's an interesting thing in itself. You know, the point is, probably there are many things for us to draw from this particular celebration today. There are many lessons for us as sadhakas in that connection. So that's why we also consider, let's speak today about this Panihati Mahotsav. Panihati is a name of a village located in West Bengal, where we will see what took place there. That's on the banks of the Ganga. And in the earlier days, it was some of the, because of the Ganga being nearby, it was a main center for trade center, with lots of movement and activities, where the river was like the main means of communication, if you will. And at one point, the city or the village was mostly inhabited by tantrics, Buddhist tantrics and kapalikas, which are the type of yogis. But eventually, in the time of Mahaprabhu and so on, that became much more predominated by the presence of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Mm. So, interestingly, there is also Panihati is connected to as being one the rest. How do you say in English? Like the residential quarters of Sri Raghava Pandit, who is a special associate of Mahaprabhu. He will appear in the context of today's celebration. I'm just mentioning that now. So Panihati is connected to being the place where he was residing. So before going to the festival in itself, to understand anything, we need a little bit of context, as usual. As I like to say, a text without a context becomes a pretext. So you can always have to provide context. So we will go a little bit with what happened before the Panihati festival, what happened during the Panihati festival, and what happened after the Panihati festival. Some afterthought to the celebration in itself. So, for us Gaudiyas, Panihati festival, one of the reasons it's very important is because it has Srila Raghunath Das Goswami as one of the main characters. For us, Srila Das Goswami is a very special personality, as you know, one of the six Goswamis, and the one who is embodying the principle of Prayoja Tattva. Each one of the Goswamis have been specially instructed or empowered by Mahaprabhu to perform a particular function, basically. Srila Rupa Goswami is our Abhideya Acharya or Rasa Acharya, and the deity of Govindaji is presiding over that principle, Abhideya, the means. Sri Sanatana Goswami is a Sambandha Tattva Acharya. Madan Mohan presides over that principle. And Sri Raghunath Das Goswami has to do with Prayojan. And his main focus in his writings and life, as you know, is Radha Dasya, which is the highest reach of the Prayojan in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. If you study Bilap Kusumanjali and his collection of poems and so on, he's totally biased in that direction, if you will. And the other Goswamis also perform in different functions. Jiva Goswami being the Tattva Acharya of the Sampradaya. Gopal Bhatta Goswami being main Diksha Guru in the Sampradaya, considering his special background. And Raghunath Bhatta Goswami being the cook of the Sampradaya for excellence. That's not less than that. So we appreciate the... This is for the ones in the kitchen now doing their very important seva. That's a very valuable one. We don't have a clue who they are, but they are making the whole thing happen. And after 15 minutes, everything disappears. All the work from hours, we will honor precept, totally disappear. So you have to be detached from the result. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was famous as being a great cook and also a great reader of the Bhagavatam. He will invoke Bhagavatam in different ragas and melodies. So in this way, we have different Goswamis performing these unique functions. So, Raghunath Das Goswami is one of the main characters in this particular Mahotsav. This Panihati celebration is described in the Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, the sixth chapter, if you then want to go into further detail there. And it's quite detailed description given by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Of course, one of the reasons is because Raghunath Das Goswami is the guru of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. So naturally, when the time comes to sing the glories of his Gurudev, again, you are naturally biased in a transcendental way. No? So there is no problem. Like Vrindavan Das Thakur's narrating of Chaitanya Bhagavat, and he starts to speak about the glories of Nityananda Prabhu, who is his Gurudev, and he gets lost and found there. And it's interesting because at the very beginning of Chaitanya Bhagavat, he's saying, okay, I will write about all the things in my book. So he gives like his overview. And then he starts to write and speak about Nityananda Prabhu, and Nityananda Prabhu, and Nityananda Prabhu. And the book is over. And you see, but you say that you will go on to speak about all these other items, and you didn't never spoke about them. So it may sound like a defect, basically. But actually it's an ornament. Because that happened because of specific absorption in one direction. So similarly here, you know, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami starts to speak about Sri Raghunath Das. He's taken over by the current of affection for his Gurudev. And vice versa, you know, to say that Raghunath Das Goswami had so much love for Raghunath Das. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami has so much love, sorry, Raghunath Das Goswami has so much love for Krishna Das Kaviraj. Also, by reciprocal dealing, guru-disciple relationship, Vishram Bena Guru Seva, Rupa Goswami say, we should serve Sri Guru with intimacy and affection. Of course, there is respect and reverence, but also there has to be intimacy and affection. At least the relationship should progress in that direction. That's a very sweet mixture of elements. So Raghunath Das Goswami made also clear how much he loved Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. If you study his Mukta Charit, the pearl story written by Das Goswami, he at the very end he's glorifying Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He says, may life after life I may obtain the association of Krishna Das Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, by whose strength I was able to write this Mukta Charit. So you can imagine, the Guru is saying that about his disciple. So there's place for, I mean, when the relationship really is there, you can expect this type of expressions of love from both sides. So that's very unique. So this story of Panihati festival and having Raghunath Das Goswami and one as one of his main characters deals with Raghunath Das's getting freed, if you will, from the shackles of material life and joining Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. Of course, the question is how much someone like Raghunath Das Goswami actually needs to get free from the shackles of material life. You know, he's in Nityasiddha Parikar of Mahaprabhu. He's Rati Manjari, so also known as Tulsi Manjari sometimes. And so in one sense we could say, okay, this is a chapter in the life story of Raghunath Das Goswami, but many of these things are actually representing a chapter in our own life as sadhakas. You know, some of the things that Raghunath Das is going through and so on is actually what we should be going through, so we can attain, get free from material attachment and eventually attain the ultimate goal that Raghunath Das Goswami himself personifies as the Prayojan Tattva Acharya. Like Arjuna in the Gita, I mean, he's a Nityasiddha Parikar. He's not actually attached and so on, but he goes through those motions by arrangement of higher agency, so we can derive something from that. So let's share some words about Raghunath Das Goswami and how this takes converges into the Panihati festival. So as you may know, Raghunath Das Goswami actually was pretty much detached from day one in the Leela. Since he was a young child, he exhibited a high degree of renunciation, detachment from material dynamics, if you will. And he wanted to join Mahaprabhu since very early. Some parallel when with us being teenagers and say, I want to go and live in the temple and leave the university and leave everything behind. And your family may say, I mean, it's nice that you worship God, but don't be fanatic. That's too much. Everything behind. So Raghunath Das Goswami was that type of person, like burning with deep longing for joining. And he was, an interesting point is, he was almost like in a demigod standard situation on earth. He had like so much money. His family was totally wealthy, like millionaire. So my point is, I mean, he was actually renounced, detached from things. Because if you are born in a homeless place and you say, I'm totally detached from everything, you don't have that much everything to be detached from. So what's the depth and value of your detachment? How much is there? But if you have everything, and despite that you say, I don't care for this, you say, okay, that's another thing. So Raghunandas Goswami was that type of person. And he made many attempts to leave his house and run after Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu was in Puri as a sannyasi this time. And he was brought back by the family guards, and he was brought back home, although he felt I'm being put in jail here, and so on. Because he tried so many times. And at one point, Mahaprabhu visited him and his family, because there were some close family ties between Raghunath Das Goswami and Mahaprabhu's family. So Mahaprabhu visited him, and of course you can imagine Raghunath Das Goswami tried already to join him so many times. And now he's coming, so this golden opportunity to join Mahaprabhu. But now Mahaprabhu himself is the one who is telling him, do not join me yet. Stay at home. Do not be crazy. Again, he's instructing us. No, do not rush, basically. Take care of your father, your mother. He was married at the time, so take care of your family issues. And eventually Krishna will make the arrangement. On a similar note of what Mahaprabhu told Sri Rupa and Sanatana at one point. Now, when he said to them, you are working in the government, you want just to join me and renounce everything, but that may not be the best way to proceed. So better externally continue doing everything you are doing, but internally kindle the fire of longing. And he gave the Parakeet example, like a lady who has a lover, but she, in order to hide her forbidden love, she will do all her domestic duties even nicer than ever. So nobody will suspect, oh, she's doing everything so nice. But internally, she's absorbing her beloved. So similarly, Mahaprabhu said, you continue doing your government duties, but internally, you feed that longing. And Krishna eventually will make the arrangements. So again, this is also an instruction for us as sadhakas, in the sense of there are levels of surrender, there are levels of practice, and we have to, as we said yesterday, I think, be sincere regarding acknowledging our adhikar, our present situation. Probably not everyone can follow the footsteps of Raghunath Das Goswami. I don't think it's that easy, if you will. You cannot imitate. Imitation is not sustainable. I mean, you can try, but like once there was one disciple of Srila Prabhupada who told him during Prabhupada's times, like, Guru Maharaj, I like just to only chant and be happy. Just chant, like Bhajanandi mood. And you say, okay. He said, I like to try to chant 3 lakhs per day, every day, and just do that. Prabhupada say, okay, try it. No? So he started, no? He had one little bhajan kutir in Mayapur. So he tried one day, and one devotee will bring him like one plate of khichdi or something. So first day, he did it. Okay, seems it's working. Let's try the second day. Second day, again worked. Khichdi again. Third day, khichdi again. And the devotee started to think, khichdi again? No ladu? Puri? It's Sunday today, Sunday feast, and Mahaprabhu. So after a week or something, he went to Prabhupada and said, I cannot do that. And Prabhupada said, no problem, continue preaching and try it again in 10 years. Like implying, that's not a bad thing to do, but you need to have adhikar to just sit and chant. Some people will criticize Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta saying, he was not a Raganuga Bhakta and he needed to preach and expand because he didn't have the capacity to absorb in but before starting his whole campaign, he will do Satakoti Namyaknya. He will sit for a decade chanting 3 lakhs every single day for a decade. I mean, you cannot do that if you do not have the adhikar. I mean, if you can imitate, but how long you can imitate? 10 years? You cannot imitate that. You will commit suicide or something. You will kill yourself if you don't have the adhikar. So he did that, and with great difficulty, he woke up from his bhajan and started to preach. I say difficulty in the sense of he has such a taste for remaining chanting and sitting. For us, the difficulty is to sit and chant. For him, the difficulty was to leave sitting and chanting. And on that basis of deep bhajan, he conducted his campaign. So, again, Mahaprabhu's teaching to Raghunath Das is a teaching for us. No? If you feel you need to be balanced in your nature as a human, as a woman, man, whatever, hey, try to fulfill those necessities in a way that creates a proper foundation for your bhakti project. In the words of my Guru Maharaj, try to develop horizontally so you can grow vertically. Because if not, you will just be a dysfunctional so-called Babaji trying to imitate Raghunath Das Goswami and doing any nonsense after 1 weekend or something. So we don't want that. We want the whole thing to be sustainable. So Mahaprabhu is trying to instruct us in that sense. No, like, I mean, you may be enthusiastic, but do not be impulsive, you say?
Yeah.
Because you can have some initial enthusiasm. That's one of the first of the 6 symptoms of Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, Utsahamayi. No, like, oh, I want to give everything in day one. But how much that becomes sustainable in time? So we need to develop enthusiasm, but it's an enthusiasm that is sustainable on a daily basis. Not just I want to change the world and surrender fully today, and tomorrow I want to do the exact opposite. No? That's the beginning of Anishtita Bhajana Kriya. You go to this extreme, okay, I want to serve Sri Radha in the Nikunja, whatever, what now? And the next day you go like, I'll go back to my grandma's house and watch movies and do whatever. And the next day you go again, these are very pretty dysfunctional, one extreme and the other. So eventually we will grow and our ups and downs won't be that extreme. It starts to be like, the undulation will be like slower and slower and slower till you reach Nishta. But at the beginning, is when you hear this stage, it's funny, Anishtita Bhajana Kriya, it's like embarrassing. But also, yeah, 1, 2, 3, I have them all, give me. But it's part of acknowledging where we are in the path. So it's not a problem, it's in the context of bhakti, as we spoke the other day. It's embarrassing, but it's glorious, because that's going on in the context of being a bhakta. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is mentioning them as part of the bhakti process. It's not outside of that. So we should have the strength and courage to accept those things. So anyhow, Mahaprabhu's point to Raghunath Das was go back home, and take care of your family duties, and if you do that properly without being evasive, Krishna will see your sincerity and make the arrangement. And meanwhile, feed your bhajan internally. And God will help, basically. That's the idea. Krishna is willing to help those who help themselves, as they say. No? Krishna says satyakare says chitanya charitamrita jai magi britya. So Krishna is there to fulfill the desires of his devotees. Britya vancha puri binu nahi ari kritya. He said, actually, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami said, Krishna has no other business other than satisfying the desires of his bhaktas. That's an interesting statement. He has no other thing to do. He's just living to satisfy the desires of his devotees. To make the point, if a devotee has a desire, a desire which is so nice, like the one Raghunath Das Goswami was having, do you have any doubt that Krishna will make all the arrangements? It may take some time to put all the things in place, and we should exhibit some patience as well. Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will say patience will show how much we trust in the arrangements Krishna is doing in our life. Patience is a symptom of faith. Because if I trust Krishna is arranging everything for my best possible situation, if I have the trust, whatever is happening in my life, I have patience about, okay, if something seems to be going wrong or weird, whatever, I have this implicit faith. No, no, I know that Krishna is creating the perfect scenario. So in case I cannot fully understand what's taking place, I'll patient. I have faith. I trust him. Goptritui baranantata rakshishyatiti vishvasu. This important angas of saranagati. Krishna will protect me. And Krishna is maintaining me. These are not just nice words. We have to walk this talk. Saranagati is the foundation of real bhakti. If there is no saranagati, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, there is imitation. That's not devotion. Devotion without surrender, imitation, he will say. So we don't want to cheat ourselves in the name of bhakti. So anyhow, Mahaprabhu is trying to make this point. You want to leave everything and join me? You want to renounce everything? Do it in a proper way so your vairagya, or your renunciation, is proper. In the words of Rupa Goswami, yukta vairagya. Yukta means proper. Proper renunciation and not falgu vairagya, or sometimes called markatta vairagya, which is the renunciation of the monkey. The monkey seems pretty much detached, only eating fruits and roots, not even wearing a coping. Following the footsteps of Sukadev Goswami, nothing. Living in under a tree. I say, wow. I know someone who doesn't wear coping and lives under a tree and only eats fruits. You say, wow, that's pretty renowned. Ah, it's a monkey, actually. And the point is, the monkey has all those things, but his main interest also is in enjoying with the she monkeys and so on. So how much detachment is there actually? It seems there is detachment, but actually... So we don't want that type of renunciation. In the words of Srila Siddhar Maharaj, don't fools rush where angels fear to tread. No. So we have this high ideal, this highest prospect, but this is so high that we don't want to take it wrong and how to say, make that cheaper than what it is. We don't want to make that cheaper than what it is and try to pay less. But we want to know what's the real price. Of course, we don't have enough currency. Grace is empowering us to do that. But we don't want to cheat it in the name of that. So Mahaprabhu is giving us costless grace. But as I like to say, that doesn't mean priceless grace. There is something to pay. So we should be willing to know how to pay. How to pay and what to pay. What's the currency and how much? Because if we don't do that, we are sahajas, basically. And there are different levels of sahaja. So you can be a sahaja. Sahaja means he who wants the thing easy, not willing to pay the real price for love. So of course we have prakrita sahajas in the world of Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, those who end up even imitating romantic leelas of Radha and Krishna, and in the name of the highest, they are engaging in sexual affairs and so on, imitating literally Radha and Krishna's erotic leela. You have the sahajas, which are not imitating on that level, but they are not ready to pay the real price. So they want to take as much shortcuts as they can, if you will. So Mahaprabhu is trying to prevent that. In other words, you want to go somewhere on one level that you are not prepared for. Or another variety of sahajism that we spoke the other day will be, you are ready to upgrade yourself to a higher level, but you are not willing to do that. That may be another perspective of being a sahaja. I want to remain in my comfort zone. And I'm ready to grow, to change, but I remain there. Like the example we gave the other day of the pacifier. A child can have the pacifier, it's okay. It's even nice. But if you as adults take a pacifier, that's unbecoming. We are not expecting that from you. Just in case you have one in your pocket, just keep it there. So there's a moment to leave that, that's my point. There's a moment to detach from that and to grow. But if you insist, no, I want to continue with my pacifier forever, that's not healthy. So that can happen in spiritual life. You get to a point when you need to pass to the next stage, But you are in denial of that and you want just to remain a Kanishtha. Being a Kanishtha Adhikari is not something bad. I'm not condemning Kanishtha Adhikaris. You have some Adhikar for Bhakti. That's glorious. But remaining a Kanishtha is a problem. Especially when you are no longer expected to remain a Kanishtha, a neophyte. You have to be a neophyte. I mean, there's a place for being in kindergarten and having a pacifier. But when the time comes to go to the next level and you insist, no, no, let me remain in kindergarten for eternity, that's dysfunctional. So Mahaprabhu is trying, all the things are implied in this instruction of Mahaprabhu to Raghunatha Das Goswami. Try to not rush. Try to take care of family, and that can be also done in the context of bhakti. It's not that taking care of the family is necessarily something wrong. I mean, our goal in Braj is not to be renunciants precisely. Renunciation is not the goal. Sannyas is not the goal. A sannyas is telling you that. Nowhere in our tradition it is said even that sannyas or renunciation is an anga of bhakti. It's an anga of yoga, it's an anga of jnana, very important one in those traditions. But in bhakti, that's not an anga. Grihe tako vane tako sadahari bhavita. Mahabhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, whether you are in the forest or at home, doesn't care. You chant always Hari. Golok Vrindavan, our goal, most of us will be grihastha for eternity there. Nobody will be brahmachari or something. Just for you to be careful of not develop some sort of rejection complex to everything that has to do with household life or anything. Srivas Pandit, he's the host by excellence of Rasa Kirtan. He's married, he has big house and all family members facilitating Mahaprabhu's Rasa Kirtan. So we should be skillful about how to deal with all the things. Brahma is saying that in the Brahma Stuti. Tava ragadayas chinas, tavat kara griham griham, tavan mohan grini gado, javat krishna nati ejana. He's saying, until and unless someone becomes your devotee, he's praying to Krishna, material attachments and desires remain like thieves, the homes remain like prisons, and the feelings for family members are like foot shackles. But he's saying, unless you become a devotee. So in Shastra we hear this, like the dark well of family life and blah blah blah, no, and so on. But that's speaking in context of being a grihamedi, not being in grihastha ashram. Grihastha is an ashram. So ashram is not dark well, ashram is shelter. Dark well is not shelter, there are two different things. No. So this is important to deal with. So Brahma is saying this, yes. All the things can become prison, foot shackle, thieves, if you are not a devotee of Krishna. But if the implication is, if you are a Krishna Bhakta, all those things that are prison-like can turn into something that is facilitating your Krishna Bhakti. That's how powerful Bhakti is. Bhakti can enter into any stage and moment and part of your life and spiritualize everything. That's what Jiva Goswami calls Sangha Siddha Bhakti. We spoke about that yesterday. You can take a shower and make that bhakti. Cooking is not bhakti. But you can cook for Krishna and then that's bhakti. But cooking in itself, that's not bhakti. If not, everyone will be engaged in bhakti every time they're cooking. But you can cook for Krishna, that's bhakti. You follow my point? So the point is, you can raise a family in the context of bhakti. Of course, easier said than done. But it's possible. The potential is there. And the potential is also being a sannyasi and getting entangled in pratishtha and other things also. So it's not that because I'm not grihastha, I'm necessarily beyond whatever material influence. Each one of us has to do their own homework. So anyhow, Mahaprabhu is trying to instruct us through Raghunatha Das Goswami in all the things. And as we know, Raghunatha Das says, okay, I will wait. But he's so attached to go to meet Mahaprabhu. In one occasion, it is said that once Mahaprabhu's mother, if I'm not mistaken, suggested, let's tie him some form of Damodar Lila, she suggested. because he's trying to escape home so many times. Let's tie him at home or something. And his father replied, but I mean, which type of shackle we can put to him? He already is shackled by Mahaprabhu. He's totally captured by him. So, I mean, he has... I mean, he lives like a deva in a heavenly planet. His wife is like an apsara. He has all the money. And none of those things are shackling him. So what will make an external rope to him? He's not tied by any of other things that most of the world is running after. So again, Raghunath Das Goswami is showing extreme detachment. But technically speaking, and this is an important point, hopefully we can get it, his detachment is a byproduct of his attachment to Mahaprabhu. Follow? Detachment is a byproduct. That's it. The detachment we are interested as bhaktas is not vairagya per se, but the one who comes as a byproduct of bhakti. Vasudeva, what's the verse? Bhakti yoga prayojita janayatya subairagyam janam te adhaitakam. So vairagyam, detachment comes as a result of bhakti. It's not that first you be detached and then bhakti comes. It doesn't work like that. That type of detachment, Rupa Goswami says, may make your heart harder. If you try to culture detachment for its own sake, that's not our path. No? The other day someone was asking me on Pandav Nirjala Ekadasi, Maharaj, I've heard that on this day I should not eat anything, and that will please Krishna more. Can you please explain me why? And I appreciated the point. She was wondering, like, why just for not eating, Krishna will be more happy? That's not our logic. I mean, someone asked once Srila Siddhar Maharaj, you know, what's the background of this not eating in Ekadasi? And he said, that you are so absorbed in chanting and hearing that you forgot eating. Like implying, the non-eating is a byproduct. The main point is you are increase your absorption in bhakti, the positive side, not the negativity of neti neti, not this, not that. That's not our path. That's gyan, neti neti neti. Too much neti neti, Prabhupada Bhakti Siddhanta say one can take you to Brahman. Be careful. If you are too much thinking this not, this is my, I have to reject this, I have to stop doing that, I have to get free from the negative. Nothing positive, everything about. That's not our path. That won't take you to Goloka. So, whatever renunciation is there, is a byproduct of bhakti. Jnana karma adi anabritam, Rupa Goswami said. This is tatashta lakshana of uttam bhakti. A secondary, byproduct-like quality of real bhakti, which is positive engagement for the pleasure of Krishna. Anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttam. If you analyze this verse, that I hope you know, the definition of uttam bhakti by Rupa Goswami, this sarupa lakshana or main qualities are all positive engagement in bhakti. Krishna anusilanam, engagement with mind, body. Krishna, for Krishna as an object, anukul, with a favorable spirit of giving him pleasure. And what will happen as a byproduct of that? Then the byproduct are the negative stuff. Anyavilasita sunyam, jnana karmadinabhita. You will get free from ulterior motives. And that will be, you will be unencumbered by jnana, karma, and so on. So we are not embracing that directly. Bhakti, parishanu, bhav, viraktir, says the Bhagavatam. Viraktir comes at the end. First bhakti and parishanu, bhav. First engage in bhakti, have in realization of Bhagavan, and then detachment. Anukulyasa sankalpa, pratikulyasa varjanam. First, accept what's favorable for bhakti. What's not favorable comes as a byproduct. Smartavya satam vishnu, vishvartavya najati, and so on. So we only accept that renunciation that comes as a byproduct of proper engagement in positive bhakti. So tyag in itself is, for us, is not a great thing. We are not tyagis. We are not bogis. No, we are not trying. We are not after bhoga, no, after bhukti, nor after mukti, but after bhakti. Bhakti is the middle path. Bhagavatam is saying, Nirvinonati Shakto Bhakti Yogasya Siddhita. Yeah. Now, for engaging in bhakti, you have to be not too much attached, but not too much detached. If you are too much attached, having you as the center, you cannot see Krishna in the center. But if you are too much detached, you won't be able to engage anything in Krishna's service. Because, oh, no, this is whatever. Matter, Maya. So bhakti is the middle path. It's not about renunciation. It's not about enjoyment. It's about serving Bhagavan in a favorable path. But people in this world, sometimes we may carry some of these samskaras ourselves. People sometimes, take external renunciation as a spiritual advancement. You follow? If you see someone wearing a loincloth with dreadlocks till the floor and dressed in ashes, you feel, wow, that's super advanced. Otherworldly. But if you see a devotee, you seem like us. You are not analyzing the internal situation, you are just being carried by the form. That's why Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was so controversial at his time. He was a sannyasi and he was riding on a car. That for us now is like, of course you have to take a car, Maharaj, to come to the program. But I tell you, no, I was walking, it took me like 1 hour to come here. Why didn't you take a car? Why you are so impractical, Maharaj?
He was riding a motorcycle in Radhakrishna.
Okay, that's even more to make the point. No? So, but at that time, again, it was pretty controversial. Sannyasi wearing shoes, riding a car. And once he was asked that, why you Gaudiyas are riding a car? Again, you have to travel in time to fully understand that. And he gave a very interesting reply. When he was asked why you are using a car, like implying you shouldn't be using cars. And he replied, only us Gaudiyas should be using cars. Like implying only we know how to use this and how to connect this particular energy of Bhagavan with his source, with its source. Everyone else doesn't know what's a car, actually. We know what's a car. It's Bhagavan's Shakti, to be engaged in the service of Shakti Ma. So only us should be using cars. So he made the whole question upside down. And instead of saying, well, I think we should be using cars, we're going to say, no, only us should be using cars. Again, you have to be Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta to say that. You have to. Because in the name of Yukta Vairagya, you can be actually cheating yourself. Yukta Vairagya Nasakta Sibisaya Yatartam Upayunjata Nirvanda Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Michate. Yukta Vairagya means you use everything, connecting everything with Krishna. So as much as you have that capacity, sorry, you can do that. But please be honest. And don't say just, oh no, Yukta Vairagya, you do any nonsense. Yukta Vairagya, everything is in connection with Krishna. Yes, but again, you have to know that. So again, Tyaga is, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, Tyaga is only one side of the two of material life. You have Bhog and Tyaga. And people go to Bhog for a while trying to enjoy, and then they get a big headache and they want to get detached from that. And they go to Tyaga. And people who culture Tyaga, these great yogis that sometimes you may see, some of them, they are so renounced that many people start to follow them, and Tyaga and Bhoga comes to them. Money, followers, enjoyment. So it's interesting how this plays out. Tyaga attracts Bhog and Bhog attracts Tyaga. But there are still the two sides of the coin. Bhog, Tyaga, Bhog, Tyaga. Bhakti is beyond this dichotomy. So the Goswamis exhibited renunciation, but that was in the context of, again, the renunciation which comes as a byproduct of bhakti. And also, in a more relative sense, they were establishing a sampradaya. They were establishing, designing the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, one of the highest reach of the Sampradaya, we could say, is the romantic affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna. So, overtly, that doesn't seem too much detached. That may seem ordinary. So, that's very easily misconstrued, misread. So, in order to show this is not an ordinary thing, they show this extreme renunciation. Like Mahaprabhu himself, like Sukadeva Goswami, to make this point, we are interested in that, but you see us. We are not conducting ordinarily, so that means that topic that captures our attention is not from this world at all. And the main sadhana of the Gaudiyas was chanting and dancing, which at that time was not typical for a Vedantin, student of Vedanta. You are supposed to sit very soberly, study the sutras. Mahaprabhu was, we know, was crying and dancing and singing. So they exhibited this renunciation to show we are not mere sentimentalists here. What to speak of being people interested in mundane romanticism. So they showed a level of renunciation that made even the Sankara sannyasis tremble. Now the renunciation of Mahaprabhu was like, that's why Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas on one level. There are so many levels that we can explain his sannyas, and many levels are connected with the main purpose for his descent, tasting Radha Bhav. But in a general way, we could say he accepted sannyas as a teaching strategy, so he will be taken seriously. He exhibited a degree of renunciation that caught the attention of everyone, even the Sankara sannyasis, like Prakasananda Saraswati and so on. So anyhow, going back to our story, sorry for being sidetracked for a moment, but it's all connected. Raghunath Das Goswami met Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu gave this instruction and he obeyed Mahaprabhu. He remained at home. He took care of his parents and wife and family for a time. And meanwhile, his longing was increasing exponentially. So again, an important lesson for us. This was not an obstacle. It was, and even if you want to take it as an obstacle, because this happened to almost all the Goswamis. Sanatana Goswami wanted to join Mahaprabhu, he was put in jail. No? Raghunath Das Goswami wanted to join Mahaprabhu, you stay here. Gopal Bhatta wanted to join Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu told, take care of your parents. So it seems always an obstacle. I cannot join. But they were so sincere that that so-called obstacle just increased their longing. So that's how we should deal with our so-called obstacles. You follow, not get discouraged. Why Krishna is doing this to me? Not enter into victim consciousness or any weird thing like that. But understand, all that is coming is to kindle the fire of my longing. So anyhow, getting closer to the Panihati festival, 2 years after that, the 2 years were passed like this, and Nityananda Prabhu, with his associates, came to Panihati and stayed there for some time. So Raghunath Das Goswami was visiting a nearby village, nearby Panihati. So he heard Nityananda Prabhu is there with his associates. So he asked permission, and he was given permission to go there. He didn't say, I want to go to Puri and join Mahaprabhu, just a nearby village and meet Nityananda Prabhu. So he went, he had that permission. So that, and it's there in Panihati, we will see that he received the mercy of Sri Nityananda Prabhu. And I will speak, of course, about how crucial this is to obtain the audience, if you will, Sriman Mahaprabhu eventually. So it is said that in Panihati, when Raghunath Das Goswami went there, he saw Nityananda Prabhu sitting on a rock under a banyan tree, surrounded by his associates, Dwadasa Gopals and some others, on the banks of the Ganga. So he was surrounded by many, many devotees, and Raghunath Das Goswami came. He was already known by the Vaishnava Mandal, but he was so humble that he didn't approach, like, here I am, Raghunath Das Goswami, or anything. He was hiding at the distance and taking darshan of the whole scene. So he didn't go in front. No? That speaks about his humility as well. He didn't announce, tell Nityananda that Raghunath Das Goswami came or anything like that. But some devotees noticed Raghunath Das Goswami is there, so they informed Nityananda Prabhu, Das Goswami is here. So Nityananda Prabhu famously called Raghunath Das, as you may know, calling him, Raghunath Das, you thief. No, he started to call Raghunath Das a thief. Of course, Nityananda Prabhu is a pretty eccentric personality, as you know. So you can expect everything. But everything in the context of divine mercy. So it's a very generous eccentricity he's exhibiting. Because you can be eccentric and be a Bada Jiva. But Nityananda's eccentricity is out of divine madness. Abadut. Basically, that's the meaning of the idea. You know? He's beyond all social regulations. you can expect everything to happen with someone like him. So he said, you are hiding like a thief. No? Because Ravana Das was like behind a tree looking. You are a thief. You are hiding like a thief. Come here. I have caught all of you now. I've trapped you. I saw you. Come here. I'll chastise you. Because the thief has to be chastised. No? I shall punish you today. Come here, thief. So you can imagine the situation. Ravana Das coming outside of the tree. No? Being called by Nityananda Prabhu, screaming, come here, I will chastise you, thief. Of course, what's the implication also of this? We could say he's calling a thief because he was hiding behind a tree. On a literal level, yeah, that's the explanation. But in a deeper way, the idea is Nityananda Prabhu is Baladev, Akanda Guru Tattva, represent the principle of Sri Guru. And Raghunath Das is trying to meet Mahaprabhu over and over again. And Nityananda is implying, you are skipping me. You are jumping over me. You are jumping over the Guru principle and you want to go directly to Bhagavan. You're a thief. You need to be chastised. So the same principle is of course there for us. No, do not try to skip Vaishnav, Sri Guru, Sadhu in your project to serve Bhagavan. It doesn't work like that. That's not Bhagavan's own style. Now Krishna himself says in the Bhagavatam, Mad Bhakta Puja Vyadika, the worship of my devotee is higher than my worship. I engage in that worship. Aham Bhakta Paradino Hi Ashratantriva. So many verses about this. So, the point is, you are so anxious running after God, but the goal of life is not God. The goal of life is the love of God. And love of God is personified in the figure of Guru and Sadhu. So where are you going after God? God will send you back to love of God. Someone once asked that to Srila Siddhar Maharaj. No. Someone asked, have you seen Krishna? Many times he was asked that. He gave different replies. Once he said, the Krishna I want to see is not easy to see. But in this connection, once someone asked, have you seen Krishna? I said, I don't know, I was not looking for it. I'm not looking seeing Krishna, I'm just looking for service to Krishna, love for Krishna. So for that I have my Gurudev. My attention was there, I don't know if Krishna was there. And once he even said, even if Krishna comes to me, and he tells me, hey, it's me, Krishna. So I say, I'll go to my Gurudev and say, hey Gurudev, is that the person you are speaking to me about always? Like emphasizing this principle of, I only want Krishna if he comes through the agency of love of Krishna, which is personified in Sri Guru. Again, our goal is not Krishna, it's Prem. And Guru is a personification of that. Srila Siddhar Maharaj one very beautifully described, someone asked, who is Srila Gurudev? What is the Guru? Can you give a definition? He said, your Guru is, Sri Guru is your own potential appearing in front of you. Interesting. The Guru is coming and showing all that you can be. So that's pretty committing because you have in your face someone who is showing all that you can be. You can become in all this. That's your potential. So that's a very unique reminder. And the potential, of course, is in the direction of Krishna Prem. So Krishna Prem personified knocking on your door and speaking to you how to reach there. So this, anyhow, that's why Nityananda Prabhu called Raghunath Das on another level thief. Now, don't skip that part, that chapter. Do not run after Krishna if you have not gone through the department of Sri Guru, Nityananda Prabhu. So after that, after saying that, Nitai took Raghunath Das Goswami by force, lovingly, and he put his lotus feet on the head of Das Goswami. So that's a chastisement of Nityananda Prabhu. I'll chastise you. The most extreme mercy you can think. That's how Nityananda Prabhu chastises people. That's his style of chastising, extreme mercy. So every time Nityananda Prabhu or one of his agents tells you, I will chastise you, you know what to do. You don't run from the place, you run to that place. And then as a further chastisement, that's a beginning of chastisement, then Nityananda Prabhu said, I'll chastise you also by ordering you to organize a big celebration that will be this Panipati. You will have to serve all the devotees. Like if that is chastisement, no? Like you have to serve all the Vaishnav, feed all the Vaishnav, that's much chastisement. Another word for mercy. So in connection to the sadhu, chastisement and mercy are synonymous, which doesn't make a difference, basically. So you prepare chipped rice and yogurt, and that's the chastisement. Chidadahi Mahotsav. Chidadahi means to this preparation. And sometimes the festival is called Danda Mahotsav. So Danda means chastisement. So punching. Sometimes sannyasis are carrying Tridanda. I have passed my 10 years of sannyas, so I left my Tridanda in Argentina because sometimes it can be a little difficult to. And mine is pretty long, as you can imagine. So my Tridanda is in Buenos Aires now. But the point of Danda is chastising. Of course, sometimes sannyasis misread this and think this is for chastising others. So you come with this stick and start to like beat everyone up, like or like you are Maya, you are not. To begin with is to chastise yourself, mind, body, words, thoughts, in the service of Bhagavan. That's a chastisement, discipline. That's the idea of chastisement. Once someone asked Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, he was speaking about how we should use all our tendencies in the service of Krishna, and someone asked, so what about anger? And he said, you should use anger to chastise Krishna's enemies. So every devotee will start to think, what does it mean in practice? And Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was reading the faces of the audience and realizing not everyone is catching what I want to say. They are thinking we have to kill the Mayabads and hit the smarter Brahmins and burn the house of the Sahaja, whatever. No? So Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta said, yeah, we should use anger to chastise the enemies of Krishna, but first we should ask, I am not an enemy of Krishna myself yet, still? Like implying that idea, chastise yourself. And chastise yourself, again, doesn't mean bring a whip and become a, but be disciplined. Healthy discipline, sustainable, not go neurotic in the name of I'm chastising myself and you go crazy. But there has to be discipline. I mean, disciple has to do with discipline. You cannot be a disciple without discipline. The very word is telling you that. Anticipating. I want to be a disciple. Well, discipline goes hand in hand with that, just in case. So it takes something to be a disciple. It's not just, I have my care-caring membership of the Sampradaya, my Gurudev gave me this name, I'm a disciple. As long as you apply yourself with sincere discipline, yeah, you are. So there are levels of discipleship, if you will. It's not black and white. So anyhow, in this way, Nityananda Prabhu chastised, quote-unquote, Raghunath Das Goswami, actually showing mercy. And again, it's important for us to understand this principle. Punishment, mercy, are synonymous. If they come from the right source, again, you can abuse this instruction and chastise people and not be merciful and create the whole generational trauma and dysfunctionality in the society. And that's not the idea. But there is place for that. If there is love and affection, Tata Varsana Hai Kripada Lakshan. Just to say, chastisement is a sign of mercy. Srila Prabhupada once said, the guru can be caressing you, or he may slap you. In both cases, he's giving mercy, which shouldn't make a difference. Or if we want to make a difference, difference should be made for chastisement, a special form of mercy, Srila Siddhartha Maharaj will say. Because you won't be chastising everyone and anyone. You have to have some intimacy to chastise someone. So that if the guru is chastising you, he's showing how much he loves you. Srila Siddhartha Maharaj once he said that. He said, oh Gurudev chastised me. It means he considers me his property. I'm saved, he said then. If that's the case, I'm saved. If Gurudev considers I'm his property, I'm saved. That's how he concluded. He didn't say, oh, Gurudev chastised me, why he did that, he was bad with me, that shouldn't be happening, and all this type of distorted, victimized direct. No, he thought, he's taking that stance because he thinks I'm his property. And that's my greatest fortune. Again, all this has to take place in a context of proper love and affection and not as an excuse to abuse or anything. So anyhow, we are ready for Panihati festival to begin now. Nityananda Prabhu gave the order to Das Goswami. So remember, Das Goswami was coming from a very wealthy family, and their family members at this time, they knew he joined Mahaprabhu, what to do. But they were sending him lots of money every month or every week, whatever, for his necessities. We will see which were those necessities, how much he needed. But with that money, what he will do, he will engage that in serving the Vaishnava. So this was a golden opportunity for that. So he sent with that money his different people to buy all these ingredients that Nityananda Prabhu asked. Cheap rice, milk, yogurt, bananas, sugar, other eatables to make in this preparation. So it is said that the cheap rice was soaked, you say, in milk. So half of that was mixed with yogurt. There's some detail about Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami loves to describe the preparations and the recipes page after page after page. That's very interesting. Chaitanya Charitamrita and Govinda Lilamrita, he does the same page after page. So it's important to appreciate that, not just, oh, this boring recipe page is coming now, let's move on. It's not like that. Or when he's mentioning all the members of the Chaitanya tree, name after name, oh, now come the names list. Let's go to the Leela. No. All those names are so powerful to hear only. No, and the same with the recipe. And in this way, we should deal with this. And so half of that was mixed of the soaked rice with mix with yogurt, sugar, and bananas. And the other ones was mixed with condensed milk and camphor, basically. And clarified butter. So every devotee was receiving two... how to say, earthen pots, yeah. Two of them, with these two varieties of the cheap rice. One mixed with yogurt, one mixed with condensed milk, and so on. Remember, this is a summer meal. It's happening now in India, so at this time in India, you need AC, if you will. That's pretty hot. So they were making something proper to the weather, so it's a fresh, refreshing meal. So the point is that Raghunath Das, the festival was there, Vaishnavas were there, but somehow or other the news started to spread. Oh, now this festival is being organized, Nityananda Prabhu is there, and so on. So more and more people started to come to the place. And Raghunath Das Goswami ordered, okay, let's keep buying more bhoga to prepare for further people. It is said that there was so much people that some of them didn't fit in the earth, in the soil, and some of them were inside the Ganges, honoring the rice, because there was no more place outside. And then comes a very interesting situation, because not only people came to partake of the festival, but some other people, they hear so many people is there, so let's go and put some shops ourselves and sell stuff. Because that happens. Now there's a big event, lots of people, you think, I can make some business here, let's open a shop. And so some people thought like that. They were not in the dedication spirit that Raghunath Das was. They were thinking how to exploit the spirit of the festival. They thought, okay, let's make some shops and make some money.
Vegan kheer.
Yeah, let's sell some bananas or all these things. So they went and put all the shops. But interestingly, what happened? Raghunath Das Goswami went and bought all they had in their shops. And then he fed them. So that's the idea. Raghunath Das' dedication defeated the spirit of exploitation. The spirit of exploitation was about to appear, but Raghunath Das Goswami's dedication was such that it covered all that and engaged everyone in and receiving. So he bought all the whatever they were selling, banana, sugar, chip rice, because they were selling that stuff. So they took all that. He took all that, and then he prepared and he gave them prasad. So that's an important also lesson for us to learn in that connection. Exploitation comes, higher dedication. It's an invitation to increase our dedication, so we do not fall victims of the exploitation spirit, basically. So anyhow, then everyone was served cheap rice, and then comes one of the interesting moments of the festival in which Nityananda Prabhu, who was in the mood of a gopa, who he is, Balaram, he was with the Dwadasa Gopas, and he brings Mahaprabhu in meditation. In meditation, he invites Mahaprabhu to come to the festival, to be present there. Mahaprabhu was in Puri, remember. It's not that close to Panihati. But he's made present by the strength of Nityananda Prabhu's meditation. So they say that Mahaprabhu arrives to the festival. And Nityananda stands up when Mahaprabhu is coming. And they start to see Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, to see how everyone was enjoying this cheap rice and so on. And from every pot, Nityananda will take a little bit and he will put in the mouth of Mahaprabhu. But not everyone will see Mahaprabhu. Some of them. But some will see just Nityananda Prabhu taking the rice from their pot and putting in the mouth of someone, but they wouldn't see. And Nityananda Prabhu was laughing. And then Mahaprabhu will take a morsel from each plate, although some of them will not see that. He will put in the mouth of Nityananda Prabhu. So the two of them will feed each other. In this particular mood of picnic and Gopa Bhav, like Krishna Balaram with his friends and so on. So they say in this way, Nityananda Prabhu walked among all the groups of eaters, which were many as we were seeing. And all the Vaishnavas were seeing all this, the fun that Nityananda Prabhu was having. Although not all of them, again, were seeing Sriman Mahaprabhu. Some of them saw, fortunate enough. Some others saw Nityananda Prabhu, still fortunate enough. And at one point, Nityananda Prabhu takes seat and sits Mahaprabhu next to him. So some pots of cheap rice, chidadahi, is brought for them. And then it is said that they start to eat themselves from their own pots. And then Nityananda Prabhu starts to order, seeing the devotees eating and chanting, he orders them, please finish your plates and chant Hari, chant Hari. And everyone starts to chant Hari, Hari Bo, Hari Bo. So it is said that at that moment, all of the one presence, all the Vaishnavas, were like immersed in this particular bhava in which, or this moment in Braj in which Krishna and Balaram are having their picnic with their friends, you know, and eating from their different lunches, like it happened in the Brahma Vimohan Lilas, you know, Krishna and Balaram and his friends eating from their different lunch packs and eating with the left hand, and Krishna's friends tasting something, say, wow, this is great. And they put that in the mouth of Krishna directly. And Brahma is looking at all this and saying, what's going on there? Brahma is Paka, follower of Vedic tradition. Like you say in Shastra, if you want to be Brahma, you have to follow Varnashram Dharma perfectly for 100 lifetimes. That's how nicely you are following all rules. And now Brahma is saying, what's going on? They are not following any rule. They are eating with left hand. They are tasting something and then putting on the mouth of Krishna, giving the remnants to him, and he's doing the same. What's going on here? It seems like a bunch of uncivilized village people. And as we know, that's the beginning of the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Vimohan means total bewilderment of Brahma. So anyhow, that's another series of lectures that actually we are doing in parallel. Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Brahma. So an important lesson here is, of course, the power of Sri Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. By his mercy, Mahaprabhu is invoked to be present in meditation. Mahaprabhu cannot resist. If Nityananda Prabhu is calling, come, he has to go. And so that's our hope also. That's why, again, we are going through Gaur, through Nitai, basically. So Nityananda is like the doorway to the heart of Mahaprabhu. You want to reach Mahaprabhu's heart? Hopefully you say yes. Yes? Okay, yes. So Nityananda Prabhu is there in the doorway. And that's why how we can go something about Mahaprabhu, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say. Most things we know about Mahaprabhu come from Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Bhagavat written by Vrindavanda Thakur, and there he says Nityananda Antaryami. Nityananda is my super soul, my Paramatma, says Vrindavanda. And whatever I've written, actually he wrote through me. Remember, he's a disciple of Nityananda. So by Nityananda's grace, we have Chaitanya Bhagavat. By Nityananda's grace, we have Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because remember, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami was at one point in his brother's house, and his brother, insulted, if you will, Minaketan Randas, who was an associate of Nitai. He liked Mahaprabhu, but he didn't like Nityananda. So Krishna Das Kaviraj said, that's Artha Kukurti Nyaya, which means half-hen logic. No? That you have a chicken and you feed on one hole, put food, and the other hole is gives you money, eggs. So you think, better I only keep the hole that gives me money, so I don't have to put more food. So he cuts the head of the chicken, expecting more eggs only. Doesn't work like that. So the same way, you cannot have only Mahaprabhu but not Nityananda. A two or zero. So you know Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami say, I won't stay in the house of my brother any longer. He's disrespecting Nityananda. And at that night, Nityananda Prabhu appeared in a dream to him with his Dwadasa Gopals and told him, dancing and singing, go to Vrindavan, there you will find what you need. And he went there after that day, reached Vrindavan, and everyone said, please write Chaitanya Charitamrita, basically. So that came as a result of Nityananda Prabhu's revelation. So in many ways, we could say, we have Mahaprabhu by Nityananda. In one sense, Nityananda Prabhu is the most important member of the, in that sense, we could say the Panchatattva. Yesterday we mentioned how good other Pandit can be also. And in different ways we can say every member of the Panchatattva is the most important. Advaita Char invited Mahaprabhu to come. Srivas Thakur is showing the perfection of hosting Mahaprabhu on a daily basis and so on. So a few words before finishing about what happened after Panihati festival. We shared some words about the before of the festival, during the festival. Now let's go to the post-Panihati event. So remember Raghava Pandit, who we mentioned at the beginning, he was one of Mahaprabhu's associates residing in Panihati. And Raghava Pandit was famous for cooking on a daily basis for Mahaprabhu in Panihati. Mahaprabhu will go every single day from Jagannath Puri, mystically, to eat Raghava Pandit's offering. He was famous for that. Imagine, every single day. Now, to say that three places where Mahaprabhu manifested always. It was whatever Raghava Pandit cooked, whenever Nityananda Prabhu will dance, and whenever Haridas Thakur will sing, chant. Oh, Mahaprabhu had to be there. He couldn't resist. So Raghava Pandit was accustomed. He offered everything and the place will be empty. That was normal for him. That's our goal. Someday we enter the altar, offer, and there's nothing in the plate. Hopefully you are happy by saying that. Not thinking, oh, I won't have lunch today, Ma. Radha Govinda, you ate everything. What to do? Oh, fasting again. That's the goal. So that happened to Raghava Pandit. So that day, Raghava Pandit of the Panihati festival, remember, he was in Panihati, but somehow he was not in the festival. So he offered bhoga to Mahaprabhu, but everything remained in the plate. No. So imagine Raghava Pandit's psychologist, something is wrong. No. The plate is not empty. We still do not think like that. But Raghava Pandit thought like that. No. So eventually he knew about the festival and realized, oh, Nityananda Prabhu invited Mahaprabhu to come. So he went. And he saw Nityananda Prabhu. And he was not complaining, but Raghava Pandit said, like, I offered that today Mahaprabhu didn't come to eat. And Nityananda said, well, because he came to eat here today. He's eating with us. You can imagine. Like, what will you say to Nityananda Prabhu? So he's here with us. Today I invited him. So Raghava Pandit said, but I'm inviting him every single day. I mean, I want him to eat today as well. So what to do? And Nitai said, no problem. He ate with us today now, but today, later, we will go to your house and eat the second time. No problem. Gaur Lila is about, it's a lot of bhojan. Bhojan means eating. Bhajan and Bhojan. In Gaur Lila, Bhojan is Bhajan. Again, do not imitate in a way. Be sincere about your Yukta Vairagya. No, it's just I engage in my Bhajan. So Nityananda Prabhu is saying that to Raghava Pandit. We'll go later today and honor that invitation. That happened after Panihati that same day. Everyone went there. Mahaprabhu manifested that Raghava Pandit. So everything was in place. I need to say that after this, Raghunath Das Goswami, he didn't eat anything yet. He fed everyone. And when the whole thing was finished, he started to take the remnants from everyone's plate and start to honor that himself. Mm. And after that, he gave ounces of gold to the different Vaishnavas present. Again, he had lots of wealth. So he somehow established this standard for what we call sometimes Vaishnav Seva. You know that in India, Vaishnavas are invited, fed, donation is given, and so on. Mm. Of course, he's giving his soul. He's not only giving money. Money is the least thing we are being asked, actually. Sarvatma Atma Arpanam Guru, says the Bhagavatam. You have to give your whole life to Sri Guru. Mm. And giving your money is maybe part of giving your life on some installment. Mm. Like someone asked one devotee once, someone asked, Gurudev, are you more interested in my heart or in my money? That's a weird question to ask your guru, but somehow that was asked. And he replied, I'm interested in both because your heart is in your pocket. The question was, are you more interested in my heart or in my pocket? He said, in both, because now at present, your heart is in your pocket. So I want your pocket. Not because I want your pocket, I want your heart, but it happens to be in your pocket. So that's how it works. So anyhow, Das Goswami was acting in such a humble way. Nityananda Prabhu was supremely pleased with him. So he put again his feet on Raghunath Das's head and said, now all your obstructions will disappear. Remember, Raghunath Das wanted to join Mahaprabhu. So now Nityananda Prabhu gave green light. All obstacles will disappear. And it is said that by the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, very quickly after that, Raghunath Das Goswami was able to join in Sri Chaitanya Devi in Jagannath Puri. How this did take place? You let me know when I have to finish.
We have 2 minutes. Okay.
So after Panihati festival, Raghunath Das Goswami is returning to his place and he has his Diksha Guru, who is Jadunandan Acharya. And at one point, Jadunandan Acharya came to Raghunath Das and said, I have one disciple who is taking care of Thakurji, but somehow he didn't come today for the seva. So please, Raghunath Das, accompany me to the house of this disciple so we can bring him back to Thakurji's seva for whatever reason. So Raghunath Das Goswami said, yes, of course. So he joined his Gurudev. And he could leave his palace because he was going with Gurudev. So he was not escaping to meet Mahaprabhu, although he was. But nobody knew. So he was with his Gurudev. And in the way, before reaching the house of the disciple, said, Gurudev, I'll go myself and tell that to your disciple. No, you can return home. And he did. I mean, he didn't lie to his guru. He did that part. He went to the disciple, sent him back to the service of Thakurji. But from there, he escaped to Jagannath Puri. He joined Mahaprabhu. He started to run he didn't take the main road because he knew, certain guards will be sent and bring me back like they did so many times before. No problem. So he went to the jungle, basically. And again, it's not that close. You go from Bengal to Puri walking. I mean, that's not an easy journey. through the jungle, no GPS, no maps, anything, just running desperate behind Mahaprabhu. Sometimes sleeping in cow sheds, sometimes eating who knows what, sometimes fasting, and so on. Long and difficult journey, but lots of lolyam, lots of greed to meet Mahaprabhu. That's greed in Gaur Lila, not being played out. Raghunath Das Goswami is showing there. As we say before, Tatra laulyam apya kalam molyam, says Rupa Goswami. If you want Raga Bhakti, the price to obtain that is to be paid in coins of greed, So greed is the currency and the price to pay. Now you are to pay greed, and you are to pay in coins of greed.
Mm-hmm.
So even before ascertaining what's the price to pay, you have to ascertain, you have to determine what's the currency. That's an important point. Not only quantity, how much, but quality. What do I have to, which is the currency? How will I pay greed? And then you can ask how much. But first you have to know, the market here only deals with greed currency. So first ascertain which is the currency, then we can speak about how much to pay. So Raghunadas Goswami finally arrives to Puri. He meets Mahaprabhu, and he's placed very quickly in the hands of Swarup Damodar Goswami. He's from that on called Swarupi Raghu, which means the Raghu of Swarup. He was put under the care and shelter of Sri Swarup Damodar. And remember, Raghunadas is Prayojan Tattvacharya, so it makes sense he's being connected with someone like Swarup Damodar, who is Lalita Sakhi. And eventually, Raghunadas Goswami, to make, of course, very long section shorter. Again, Krishnadas Kaviraj is describing all this in very great detail, beautifully. He was still receiving some money from his family, but eventually he stopped, and he was organizing, inviting Mahaprabhu for lunch. But at one point he felt, I don't want to use this money, which is coming from my family in the service of the Vaishnavas. So he stopped doing that. And he started to exhibit gradually more and more and more and more and more renunciation, tyaga. At one point he will beg, and at one point he thought, which is already a lot. I mean, he was not just getting money. He stopped receiving any money. He sustains himself by begging. And then he said, at one point he felt, by begging, I'm just thinking, when people come, I'm thinking, oh, he may give me, he may not give me. And my mind starts to calculate like a prostitute with the clients. So I will stop begging. You may ask, so what's more renounced than that? To beg. So he went to one public, how do you say in English, when they give food to people who doesn't have money or whatever. He went to one of those places for some time. But then he felt, no, this is supported by materialistic people, so that's not good. So which was his next step? He went to Jagannath Puri, where the area of the temple where the Mahaprasad of Jagannath, which was not sold in the shops and was like rotten, was given to the cows. And those things that even the cows would not take, Raghunadas will go there, wash some of those grains with water, put some salt. That was his prasad. Mm-hmm. So at one point Mahaprabhu was hearing this, his level of renunciation. He was very happy with that. Again, this is renunciation which comes as a byproduct of bhakti. And Mahaprabhu ran one day, and Raghunadas was having his feast. And Mahaprabhu said, oh, you are having such a feast that you are not inviting me. And by force, he takes some grains from the hands of Raghunadas and starts eating them. No? No? Like glorifying that. No? Again, vairagya. Interestingly, the word vairagya is translated as detachment by vairagya. Ragya means raga, attachment. And vai means vaishishtya, a very special type of. So vairagya actually means a very special type of attachment. And we translate that as detachment. Because when you have a very special type of attachment, you will show detachment from everything else. And that's the type of detachment that Mahaprabhu likes. Mahaprabhu bhakta ganer vairagya pradam yaha dekhi dikhprita hai gaura bhagavan. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Mahaprabhu is very happy when he sees vairagya in his associates. But this type of vairagya, which comes as a byproduct of bhakti. So anyhow, Raghunadas received the shelter of Swarup Damodar Goswami. But at one point he wanted to receive some personal instruction from Mahaprabhu. And he asked him, and Mahaprabhu said, what? But I put you in the hands of Swarup Damodar. He knows more than me, he will say. Which is a fact. Because then Mahaprabhu took lessons from Swarup Damodar in Gambira for 12 years. He was schooled by him and Ramananda Roy about tasting Radha Bhav. But somehow Raghunadas Goswami insisted, please instruct me in some way. Give me some lesson. And then comes famous instruction that Mahaprabhu gave to Raghunath Das just before to conclude. Two verses, which actually are for us in one sense. No? So which are those two verses? Gramya Katana Sunive, Gramya Bhartana Kaive, Arana Kaive, Arabalana Paive, and Amani Manadahanya Krishna Nama Sadalabe, Braje Radha Krishna Seva Manasa Karive. In two verses, he's covering the whole scope from the most basic instruction to the highest one. The first verse, he's saying, Gramya Katana Sunive, which basically means, do not hear gossip. Of course, this was not for Raghunath Das Goswami. He was not like... Gramya Vartana Kayu, do not speak gossip. Because one may do one thing, but not the other. And then he said, Balana Kaive Ara Balana Parive. Do not wear fancy clothes. I mean, Raghunath Das Goswami had one coping in his closet. That's not fancy. And do not eat fancy food. We just say what was his prasad. So he was clearly instructing us through Raghunath Das Goswami. With very basic initial instruction. Do not gossip. Vachovigam, Rupa Goswami is that similarly. No? Do not be a servant of your tongue. And do not be overtly attached to your how you look and what the world thinks of you. And then he says, Mani Manada Hanya Krishna Nam Sadala, chant Srinam, Harinam, being respecting everyone, not expecting respect. Like he's reinvoking third verse of Sikshasaka. And then Braja Radha Krishna Siva Manasa Karibe. In your mind, search Sri Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Like that's the converging point. But it all begins, do not be a gossiper. Like implying, if you are still gossiping, please do not come with me. I want to meditate and Radha and Krishna. Stop gossiping. And you say, what does it have to do with Braja, Radha, Krishna? There is a connection there. So in these two verses, he's covering all this. And again, he's instructing us through Raghunath Das Goswami. So this way, this Chidadahi Mahotsav, and whatever it happens before, during, and even after that, as we can see, it's very important for us. It has so many lessons for us as sadhakas that we can apply so we can attain someday the ultimate goal that Raghunath Das Goswami himself personified as the Prayojan Tattvacharya, and which is the ultimate goal that the Gaudiya Sampradaya is giving to us. So in this way, every single year we celebrate in our calendar Chidadahi Danda Mahotsav in Panihati. And today we are joining here. In Panihati today they are celebrating that in India, and today in Alacha we're joining the celebration. Geographically distant, but one in spirit, through the medium of Harikatamrita, proper Shravan, proper Kirtan. I'm praying to imbibe Raghunath Das Goswami's spirit of service, submission at the feet of Sri Guru, Sri Nitai, trying to approach these higher realities with proper caution and guidance, as all this Leela is showing to us. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, also there are some Chidadahi being prepared in the kitchen. So in every sense of the term, we will be celebrating Chidadahi Mahotsav. Ki Jai. Sri Nityananda Prabhu Ki Jai. Sri Raghunath Das Goswami Mahashay Ki Jai. Gaur Hari. So, we have...
maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah? There are any questions before finishing you want to share? We have a few moments, or anything you would like to share, comment on. Yes?
Maharaj, what is the connection with Raghunath Das Goswami giving gold? I was actually surprised that he actually gave gold to the devotees as a donation. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, basically it has to do as, again, he had certain, facilities that came to him, and he was putting all that in the service of the Vaishnavas, no? So he will invest lots of his money into buying the ingredients for the preparations, but as if that was not enough, that shows like how much he wants to serve and to give whatever he has in his own capacity just to throw that at the feet of the Vaishnavas. So to give gold will be like a way of saying, like when you go to India now and you go to some festival and they will, I remember first time I went to India, it was like, I didn't know what's going on. Because they were give me like a, how to say, envelope?
Yeah.
No? In certain festival, I was like, what's this envelope? Oh, there's Lakshmi here. What, they are giving Lakshmi to me? No, it's for the expenses of your travel, to the travels, whatever, possible travels, although I was just walking or whatever. And then I came as a sannyasi, they give me bigger envelopes. So like, and they give you chadar, and they give you gifts, and give. So the spirit is, no, Vaishnav Seva, that's how these festivals are actually called. No? So he's trying to really engage in that spirit of giving and dedication. And for Raghunath Das Goswami, giving ounces of gold was like to give an envelope with 100 rupees nowadays. No? He had that capacity. So that shows basically how much he was willing to surrender whatever wealth or things he had, all that he had, in the service of the Vaishnavas. No? Like in playing, if you have a room full of gold, what will you do with that? No. Maybe will you conclude the same as Raghunath Das, let's make a festival and I will give all this gold to every Vaishnav that comes, or maybe some other idea. So you know what Raghunath Das Goswami will do with that. So trying to make that point, like you have wealth, okay, try to engage the wealth in the service of the Vaishnavas. Of course you may need to attend some personal necessities, but even those personal necessities shouldn't be separated from your ideal of serving the Vaishnavas. Ideally, you don't have a separate life. That's the point. So if you are, again, eating, earning money, sleeping, it's not a selfish activity, necessarily. If you are living for Krishna, your guru, there's no selfishness there. So yeah, basically that will be the principle behind the giving of the gold, basically. Something else?
Marge, going back to what you were saying about how, I think you said one type of sahaja is when you are more qualified for another stage, but you're getting complacent and you're not willing to go back. And you gave the analogy of, you know, somebody who grows up but still wants the pacifier, but, you know, becomes very inappropriate. So what's an example of how that would actually manifest in our devotional life? Because I get the analogy, but I'm trying to think of like a practical example of how that would show up in a devotee's life.
Well, for example, as we were speaking the other day with Indupati Prabhu, there are different degrees of understanding of Shastra. You can understand Shastra literally. You can understand Shastra interpretatively. Or you can understand Shastra esoterically. There are many layers of that. And sometimes, or in Sanskrit, there are different degrees of meaning. You have Mukhya Vritti, Lakshana Vritti, Vyanjana Vritti, which means Mukhya Vritti is the main meaning of the section. Lakshan Vritti means like you are interpreting, and Vyanjana Vritti means like suggested meaning, more esoteric, like Parokshavad in direct speech. So there are, to give an example, a Kanishta Bhakta, and again, I'm not condemning the Kanishta Bhakta, will have generally a more literal view of everything, like copy-paste. This is what the scriptures say, there's no other way, there's the only thing, and it's perfect, and it's perfect, of course. There are so many degrees and layers, and there's relativity in Shastra as well. But there's relativity there's a relative side to three gurus, Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say. There's the absolute side and a relative side. Relative, for example, guru may say something to one disciple and something else to another. So you cannot absolutize. If you hear Gurudev saying to one devotee, don't get married, as we were speaking the other day, it doesn't mean that you have, okay, Gurudev say that, you, all of you married people get divorced because Gurudev said this. No, it's not like that. But in one stage you may be having this type of perspective, like you tend to absolutize the relative. And that takes you maybe to relativize the absolute. So a Kanishta Bhakta may be interpreting Shastra in a certain way where everything has to be absolute and everything has to be perfect. And there can be any type of differences of opinion or contradiction. But at some point of your journey, you realize, no, there are differences of opinion in our sampradaya, among acharyas. And there shouldn't be a problem. We shouldn't like get neurotic about that. And that thing, how to harmonize that. A certain stage of my life, that's not happening. But at a certain stage, I'm starting to realize, oh, this is... No? And my point here will be, if at that point what I realize there are some differences that I need to harmonize, if I choose not to see that and just cherry pick, let's go to a practical example. Srila Prabhupada said many times, we fell from Vaikuntha. And in another section he said, it is in one purport of the Bhagavad, it is a fact that nobody falls from Vaikuntha. You have to do something with that. It's not even two different things from two different people, but from one single person. You follow my point? So if you're in the beginning, you may not care for that. You may not even see the contradiction. You may not relate. And it's okay. There is a stage for just Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya, and that's all. But at one point you realize, oh, but he said this here and he said that there. It's not that you are being offensive because you are seeing the contradiction. It's just you are sincerely studying his words attentively and you want to make sense of them so you can properly incorporate that answer. So you have to harmonize that. It's not like, okay, I will pick the statement that I like the most. Cherry pick. Rupa Goswami says, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, that's not how Siddhanta is arrived at. If you find two apparent contradictions in Shastra, you cannot just pick the one that is more comfortable for you. That's not the sincere process. You have to harmonize the two, whatever it may be, what it takes to harmonize that particular thing. So that for me would be one example. Now, like, you are invited to grow, you are invited to, you realize, I need to harmonize that, but instead you do not do that, you don't take the trouble to do that, because it's complex. It may not be easy.
Takes you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, of course. But if you do that properly, that will nourish your faith. It won't disturb your faith. It may seem it disturbs your faith. Oh, there's a contradiction.
Yeah.
But if you properly harmonize that, you will realize, oh, now my faith is stronger. No, and you have grown. And that has more to do with a Madhyam Bhakta than a Kanishna Bhakta. Madhyam Bhakta, interestingly, is someone who harmonizes head and heart. No, who is engages his her intellect to, as my Guru Maharaj will say, try to use your head to soften your heart. But do not try to soften your heart without using your head. You will end up being an emotionalist only. So Madhyam is concerned with that, with making sense, using intellect. You have to use everything in Krishna service, not only your body, physical, but subtle body as well, mind, manas, chitta, and so on, intellect, buddhi. So that will be one, if you will, practical example in which you realize, okay, I'm being called for some further progress, further harmonizing, and maybe for whatever reason you may, no. For fear, for remaining in a comfort zone. So that will be problematic.
Sometimes
of course.
You try to stand on the, you try to justify it by saying, oh, it's my Guru Nishtha. I should not have any doubts in Guru. Which is, it's not any doubts, but your mind might tell you, if you try to go a little deeper or try to understand the words of Guru, you might be like, oh, you know, not having Guru Nishtha. So the Guru Nishtha beliefs will come in your mind or somewhere online,
mm-hmm.
you know, or try to get you.
Yeah, and Guru Nishtha is not just being fanatical. Because sometimes that's taken to be Guru Nishtha.
Yeah.
No? No, Gurudev says it's perfect, subtle to everyone. And you are doing that from an immature, fanatical side. It's not actually mature,
yes.
Deep Guru Nishtha. Deep Guru Nishtha means, like Srila Siddhartha Maharaj said once, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was given a lecture, and he was given a lecture, I think he was speaking in English or something, and he mispronounced one word. So Gurudev was mistaken. So one devotee suggested, let's change the dictionary. Because Gurudev cannot be mistaken anywhere, in any moment. So the dictionary should be changed according to the new revelation that came now. So some devotees start to celebrate that. But Srila Siddhartha Maharaj was there and said, no, that's Kanishtha conception. I mean, we are not thinking Gurudev is wrong. But there's something to correct in his service. We are doing this in the service. We are not fault finding. Oh, Gurudev is wrong and now my faith is going. No, that's a relative detail. I mean, he mispronounced the word.
Yeah.
We have to correct that in his service. He will be happy for that to follow. So it's in the same idea. Now, Guru Nishtha may seem, No. We don't need to correct anything. If the pure devotee mispronounced something, actually, the mispronunciation was in the dictionary, and the real word is this one. I said, no, that's not.
We can see that practically. Sometimes Gurudev will speak, our Gurudev will be speaking, and then he will act like he's forgetting the word or something. And then Radhanapur will say something, or Madhava Maharaj will say something. But it's not like Gurudev doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like he's engaging everybody else to in that lila. You know.
So anyhow, it's Guru Nishtha is not such a cheap thing, basically.
Yeah.
It takes, we have to do our homework as disciples and think for ourselves and feel that invitation to harmonize and to discover a deeper side to our Gurudev. Because we know Gurudev on some level, but there are so many unlimited layers of that. And every disciples, progressive disciples, should be willing to keep discovering who is Gurudev, who is actually Gurudev, what is actually, like we said the other day, when Uddhava went to Vrindavan, he discovered a new Krishna, basically. He knew Krishna, but he realized, oh, I didn't know this side of Krishna. So in this way, we have to remain open to discover Srila Gurudev in his unlimited layers. Anyhow, I think we are on time now. Now will be Aarti. And then Mahaprasad, so thank you so much to all of you. It has been my pleasure again to...
Maharaj, 5 more minutes.
5 more minutes. Panihati Mahotsav is taking same time.
They're mixing. Nityananda Bruce.
Okay, Nityananda Bruce. Are there any other questions before we finish then?
Maharaj,
yeah.
You've mentioned this, and we hear so much about this idea of Adhikar.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, this connection to the idea of having adhikar for something, for a new level, but being attached to the current level. I want, maybe a big question, but to understand, I guess, the aspects of adhikar. What does adhikar actually entail? Because sometimes I see for myself, I can conceive of something, but to approach it, to actually act upon that conception, somehow or other I feel unable to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel that to conceive of something that is like maybe some component of adhikar, but
mm-hmm.
to be able to act upon it,
mm.
maybe another component,
mm.
what feels natural, like where there's momentum for something,
mm.
that feels also like some component of adhikar,
mm.
which may not be connected to what I conceive.
Mm.
So maybe this is, but I feel like this is important.
Maybe for my next visit to Alaska in 1 year or something. I mean, I could say something, but my point is your question deserves. I'm unfolding, unpacking a lot, because that's an important one. What's adhikar? Because sometimes we just may take for granted these expressions, like adhikar, has adhikar, no adhikar, but we don't play out the implications of that. But in brief, again, brief sutra-like reply, I will say that a beginning way of establishing adhikar, as you mentioned, is like one may have some particular conception about something or some interest in one direction, and that's a beginning adhikar. It doesn't mean that you are ready to, do the whole thing. So, we are ready for arti? Yeah. So basically, I would say that, like we, if you have some interest in some conception of the thing, that speaks of one based adhikar, and with that basic adhikar, one can go to Sri Guru and the Sadhu and know what to do with that attraction and conception of how that will play out in practice, and that will create a particular insight, realization, and all these other sub layers of adhikar will be taking place. Very brief reply. Thank you so much. Shri Sri Guru Gauranga Radha Govinda Ji Ki Jai, Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Panihati Mahotsav Ki Jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Bol.